Hey friends, before we jump into this episode of Film on the Rocks, we just want to let you guys know that our Patreon is now in full swing at patreon.com/filmontherocks. We have a $2 tier to become one of our drinking buddies, Water School 2. This includes early access to episodes, bonus episodes, polls for what we cover, and so much more. So come check it out. Once again, that is patreon.com/filmontherocks. Check the show notes for our links.
Hey folks, before we get to the quotes of the episode, I just wanted to quickly plug our Talks on the Rocks bonus episodes that we've been doing. They've been a lot of fun, and we have a segment in there where we like to talk about listener questions, comments, or even some funny stories y'all want to share with us. So if you have any of those things you want to share with us, please email it to us at fotrpodcast@gmail.com. It was a lot of fun last time we did it, and we want to keep the fun going, so just be sure to get that into us whenever you can. All right, thanks. Enjoy the show. The runt is mine.
This is a lot harder than it looks on the internet.
Operation Stupid is officially over.
I'm having a kid. Your little boy's growing up. I gotta go pregnant. Now I gotta go live with her. She lives in Reno. I don't know how I'm gonna get there. Probably have to take mom's car. But we're gonna live together. We're gonna live in a trailer park. Her name's Shirley. She's real great.
Listen, I get it. I went to school. There were plenty of teachers I just wanted to kill.
It reeks in here. What's it smell like? The corpse of a rotting hottie.
Do you have any idea what I just went through?
Man, I was in your closet for like 2 weeks. I gotta take a piss.
That's right. Every serial killer has a neighbor. Today, we are talking about Disturbia from 2007.
Nice.
Thank you.
Very good.
Levi, I'm going to do something that I've never done before on the podcast.
What's that?
I'm going to let people listen to me open that beer. All right.
How about we're
having a good time. Welcome back to Film on the Rocks. I'm Brucker, and as always, I am joined by my good buddy Levi. Levi, how are you?
I'm doing well, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. I am so pumped. I'm so excited to talk about this movie. I've already fumbled up the intro, but today we're talking about Disturbia from 2007. I love this movie. I am so excited to talk about it. Have you, before I ask you that, I'll kind of go over some of the credentials of this movie. This movie came out in 2007 and it was directed by DJ Caruso. He also directed Eagle's Eye that came out in 2008, which also starred Shia LaBeouf. This movie was... Steven Spielberg was actually the executive producer on this movie, and that was actually how they got Shia LaBeouf to do this, because Shia said, "You don't say no to Spielberg." This movie stars Shia LaBeouf, Sarah Romer, Carrie Ann Moss, who was Trinity in The Matrix, David Morse, who's been in lots of stuff like The Green Mile, and he also directed the Friday the 13th TV series that was out in the late 80s. And this movie also stars Aaron Yu. This movie is so much fun, and it's very nostalgic for me, because I remember being in middle school when this came out, and this was kind of like Shia LaBeouf's coming out party as like a really good actor, because he was done with Even Stevens, and he did, I think, a couple Disney movies, including The Greatest Game Ever Played, that golf movie. But this was, I believe, his first venture of getting out of the mouse's wheelhouse. And you know, what's a better movie to do than a horror thriller that's also the horniest movie to come out in 2007? So Levi, this was your first time watching this, correct?
Yes, it was.
What are your initial impressions of the movie? What are your thoughts?
As you know, I am horror scary-esque movies are not a movie that are not movies that I actively seek out on a consistent basis. It's something I married into. I can go for a thriller now and again if it's done right. If it's a movie that doesn't rely solely on jump scares. then I can I can deal with it. This movie was better than I thought it would be. I was told when I was going to watch it, I told Rachel that we were going to watch it. And she's like, she was so excited about it. She said, I remember last time I watched it, it made me so sweaty. And I was like, what?
Yes, it does.
Like, this movie, like, you've got nerves of steel. What are you talking about? She's like, yeah, this movie is tense. It's like, oh, my gosh. And so I you know, looked at the Rotten Tomatoes score before going in. It's got a 69% tomato meter, 77% audience score. And after watching it, I don't think the 69% gives it is high enough. I don't think that's high enough. I think like a 75 to a 79% is pretty fair. It's
okay.
It's not a perfect movie by any means, but it is really good. I think Shia LaBeouf knocked it out of the park. Like this is like this. Spoiler alert for A Drinking Rule. One of them is drink every time Shia LaBeouf. You realize how good of an actor Shia LaBeouf is. We kind of put Shia LaBeouf in this camp of people, at least I am guilty of it, where he's kind of this actor who is disowned in Hollywood and had his heyday as a kid and kind of wandered off and did some stupid stuff or whatever. But he is so good. He's so good. And I thought he was by far the brightest and best part of this movie by a long shot. He was so good. And you mentioned Trinity from The Matrix. It took me a lot longer than I'm proud of to pinpoint her. I said, I know his mom is someone. Don't tell me. I know it's Trinity from The Matrix. I got it. So, yes, I was love seeing her. She is just, I'm trying to remember her name, Carrie Ann Moss. Such a good actress. Yeah. Loved seeing her in that. But, yes, as a whole, this movie I really, really enjoyed.
Oh yeah, no, it was great, and I think I agree with you that Shia LaBeouf was probably or is the bright spot of this movie, because I mean, one, he's a good actor, and it's shown and it's evident, and this is a movie where we are stuck with this person in the house with them the whole movie,
right?
Just about the whole movie, so you really got to have somebody who's captivating enough for you to want to keep watching them because they're stuck in a house and just spying on their neighbors all day.
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, parallel it to Will Smith's movie, I Am Legend. It's just him hogging the screen the whole time. And he's a good enough actor to where it's okay. He could take on that role and you could follow him through this. And that's how this is. Yeah. Kale's character in Disturbia interacts with Ronnie and Ashley and his mom and some other people, but like this movie would suffer greatly if it didn't have a good enough actor for us to be stuck in the house with them.
It's funny you mention Will Smith, because I just now thinking about it, I would put Will Smith and Shia LaBeouf kind of in the same camp, but they diverged at a very critical point in their careers. They both were people who at an early age were recognized for how talented they were. They had their television shows. Like, at a young age, they're like, these guys are really, really good actors. The problem is they kind of hit their they hit their stride, and one of them continued on up into the heavens, and one of them kind of hit a plateau and has recently started to crawl their way back into a relatively decent place in Hollywood. Will Smith is one of the biggest actors in the past 20 years. Like, by, you know, in my opinion, he's has just put himself into a position to where he can take on a role and do it very well. Even if it's not a great movie, he as an actor is really, really good. And Shia LaBeouf, for some reason, it just wasn't in the cards. He made a couple costly decisions as far as, you know, his fame is concerned, and the big thing was him plagiarizing I can't remember what the play is called, but he did like a screenplay and he plagiarized another person's work, and it kind of, he lost a lot of credibility. But he's slowly been bringing himself back out of the back into the limelight with think movies like Fury with Brad Pitt. I haven't mm-hmm. seen the movie Peanut Butter Falcon, but apparently that movie just kicks ass. But he's slowly but surely kind of made his way back into a place we're familiar with. In a place he should be, because he's very, very talented.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's something that that's something that just kind of adds to the fun of this movie, because in my opinion, this is kind of going back to those days of where like, oh, like this kid is going to do great stuff, you know? Mm. And it was very nostalgic for me specifically, because I grew up watching Even Stevens.
Yeah.
And I remember that was just, this was the big pull for people in my age group to go see this movie. It was like, Lewis Stevens is in this movie, is in this horror thriller. Like, we got to see it. And this movie came out when I was, I think, like 12 or 13. And I remember thinking, oh, that movie looks really good, but I wasn't into horror movies or scary movies yet. I was like, I don't know if I can see it. It might be too scary. Mm-hmm. And this was definitely kind of like that gateway thriller horror movie for me, because this movie isn't, it's very thrilling, it's suspenseful the first time you watch it, but it's not, you know, it's not gory at all. It's not a slasher film by any means. So it's a very good like gateway. Like, hey, you like that little taste of adrenaline you get from watching something a little scary? You know, this is, yeah. There's lots of, this kind of opens up the door to like, okay, I guess I can handle this a little bit. But yeah, this movie, it's so much fun. And one of my favorite things about this is that we are stuck in the house with them. Like, that's something that I really appreciate, is that, like, for instance, when we have, like, Ronnie goes out to do his bidding, we're not having a POV of Ronnie. We're experiencing, like, Ronnie's perspective through Kale and, like, that radio transmission that he's getting. And that's something I really appreciate, that we didn't really leave the house without Kale, mm-hmm. except for, like, twice. But that's something that I really appreciate about this. You felt trapped with him.
Yeah, they did do a really good job about that. And like you said, he's not the kind of actor that you are worried about leaving, you know, being alone within the house, because he can carry the emotions of it all. And even being in the house, it cracked me up just because of this very 2007 idea of what like an angsty teenager is, like the skull poster and the flame stickers and the Twinkies everywhere. And he like, oh my gosh, dude, to watch this as an adult and to see him like do the dishes,
it's funny,
and like just dump dump it on and close it and then throw it, just like, oh god, it just is just,
it's also worse. It's also like adding on to that, like the trash TV that he loves to watch, like he's watching Cheaters.
Yeah.
And I never watched that show, but I just remember like I do remember getting into some like really weird dramatic reality TV for some reason when I was 13. I don't care for that stuff really much anymore, but, and just all the junk food he's eating, yeah. And he doesn't have anything to do, but he still drinks Red Bull throughout the mm-hmm. day. So
yeah, it's just classic teenager. And they kind of clue you into it, where he scoops the peanut butter and then dips it in Nutella or whatever and takes a bite out of it. And then his stomach grumbles and he's like, oh crap. And it catches up with him.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I watched I was listening to like the DVD commentary on this, and that was something that Shia said. That was like one, he said this was one of the best parts of the movie for me, because I just got to eat peanut butter and it was awesome. And like it may look gross to some people, but it was an awesome concoction that I just got to eat. But he also pointed out what you were just talking about, how he gets like an upset stomach and he has to go to the bathroom. And he said, this was really hard for me, because I'm coming out of the bathroom, I just got done taking a massive shit, and then I go from, oh, the relief of taking a poo, to he looks over to like his dad's writing room, then being sad about his dad being dead. And he's like, it was a weird transition of emotions for me to go through.
Yeah,
as an actor.
I didn't think about that. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I also would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that Viola Davis is in this movie, like a young Viola Davis. And yes. She is, you expect someone like Viola Davis to just be the center of attention. Like, she just commands a scene. And she's just this, like, whatever, this officer who is kind of rigging him up with his trekking, his ankle bracelet or whatever. And it just it feels mm-hmm. so weird that she's not there, that she's not the main villain, or that she's not the main hero. She just kind of is there for a brief moment, backs out, comes back at the end. It's just so weird to see her not smack dab in the middle of the movie.
They kind of used her as she delivered some jokes that were pretty funny.
Yeah, she was very funny.
You know, like she's explaining him all the rules of it's waterproof and water resistant. So, you know, don't stick your foot in the bucket and try to hop out. You'll just look stupid and you'll get caught. And she's, you know, she's kind of laying down the groundwork like, hey, you need to keep yourself busy because people kind of go crazy while they're doing this. It may seem like a breeze, but it's really not. She was pretty funny. And also she lands down the big ticket price of this to mom, $12 a day for 3 months. Ugh. As a kid, I didn't really pick up on that. But, you know, as an adult, I was like, oh, my God, that's expensive. $12 a day for 90 days. You're like,
that's over $1,000. That's cash money, man. Oh, my gosh, because you have some kid.
To stay in your own house.
For the record, let me just clear it up on this. And this all depends on how close you are to your father figure, I guess. I'm very, very, very close with my mm-hmm. dad. If my dad had died granted, I guess it was a year later, but still. If my dad had died and someone had the audacity, like someone that isn't even close to me, like some random teacher I have for like mm-hmm. a year, or some random adult that has a little bit of authority over me for like 1 year, and has the audacity to be like, what would your father think? Like, yeah, this guy absolutely deserves to get decked for that. Like, where do you get off, man? Like, you're teaching Spanish. Like, first of all, it's high school Spanish, and they should be like, oh my gosh. Like, I remember seeing that, and he's like, what would your father think? And my thought immediately was, Shia LaBeouf, you better beat the shit out of this guy. And he just, whap! I was like, yeah, got him. You know, granted, like, obviously I'm not condoning violence in schools. That's obviously not what I'm doing. Like, obviously, Shia LaBeouf in this moment should have had self-control and recognized that just because one guy makes some sort of slight comment about how he should know what his father thinks and thinks he kind of goes on this power trip a little bit, doesn't mean he should hit him. But I could feel in my soul just like this level of like, man, I would also kind of, I probably wouldn't come up and just right cross the guy, but I would probably feel a clenched fist and it would probably cross my mind of being like, should I just lay this guy out? But yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree with you. I watching this, I was like, no, the teacher deserved it. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, you know, whatever, yeah. You shouldn't hit someone just because they said something, but still, the teacher kind of crossed the line, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And just like you're saying, it's just a high school Spanish class, and it's also, I think, at the end of the year, too, because they're just about to go on summer break. So, I mean, Just fail him. You don't have to insult him.
Yeah,
like
I don't think I ever got any lower than a B plus in a high school Spanish class, and no one ever since I graduated high school has ever been like, oh, I'm so proud of you for doing all your Spanish homework. Like, listen, 5 years down the road, nobody's gonna care. Be like, what would your dad think that you didn't do this one assignment for me? Like, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, we can both agree that teacher crossed the line for sure. You gotta have some better sensitivity than that. I remember it was, man, this is, whoa, my brain just went down a track. Have you seen the movie, it's a book too, are you sure, have you read the book, Bridge to Terabithia?
I've seen the movie, yes.
Not to, you know, big spoiler alert, maybe skip ahead 20 seconds or whatever, but essentially someone important dies in the movie and some kid makes a comment about this dead character and, I forget his name, the guy who plays the main character. He plays PETA in Hunger Games. Josh something. Reaches back and just lays this kid out for like making a comment about how glad he is that his friend's dead. And the teacher, this woman who's teaching him, pulls him outside in the classroom and is like, it's okay. I understand where you're going through. If you need to talk to a counselor, talk to a counselor. If you need to talk to me, talk to me. Just like it's okay to cry, it's okay to be emotional or whatever. And I was like, I can remember that scene and being like, that feels like the right kind of response to be like, you shouldn't hit people, but I'm not just going to push you aside and be like, you're not feeling it. Be like, no, it's like, it's hard to lose people, especially a dad, for crying out loud like that. Like, it's not just like he passed away. It's he got in a car accident. I was driving and I saw his dead body laying limp, you know, hanging outside the window of our overturned vehicle. Like, that's some heavy, heavy trauma.
It is. And that's something that I felt like this movie failed at, was him getting over his guilt about that, because they don't really address it. They kind of just use it as a way to piss him off, a la like how in Back to the Future, you can just call Marty McFly a chicken and that's how you get him to do whatever you want. I felt like that's what they used the guilt of his dad dying in that car crash in this movie. I felt they could have brought his guilt about that to the forefront a little bit more, so that way we see him get over it eventually, but they don't really address it. It's just something that they use to piss him off throughout the movie.
Also, it doesn't... There's no real payoff to it. It's just a vehicle to get him into the house to be arrested. There's no, like, the killer also killed his dad, or the killer has a vendetta against his father, or there's no real theme with his dad except for the fact that it's him laying out this irresponsible teacher, gets him house arrested, and then gets him viewing this guy who's suspected of being a serial killer.
Right, yeah. And I mean, that's something that I do give this movie credit for, is that the pacing is really good. I mean, I clocked it at 9 minutes in, he is getting put under house arrest. And it's in 9 minutes, we get the whole thing. He has his guilt about his dad dying. He lashed out at a teacher for, you know, pissing him off about it at school. And we're seeing that now he's under house arrest, and that's why he's stuck here. When we recently, a couple episodes ago, we had Fan Dummies on to talk about Solo. Mm-hmm. And when we got done recording, we're kind of chit-chatting with them. And Aaron from Fan Dummies mentioned to me that, oh, if you're going to be covering Disturbia, you need to see Rear Window. It's an Alfred Hitchcock movie from 1954, and Disturbia is very much an update on that movie. You should check it out. So I took her up on that, and I watched Rear Window this weekend, and it was really great. And Disturbia absolutely is an update on this movie. Rear Window, it's about, it's pretty much like the same story, just different reasons. It stars James Stewart, and he's not under house arrest. He's just stuck in his apartment because he has a broken leg, and he doesn't have anything to do. So he just kind of, he doesn't have a TV to watch or anything like that. So he just watches his neighbors all day, and he witnesses what he thinks he witnesses a murder, and the plot unveils about him trying to get evidence. And there's lots of things in this movie that are homages to that movie that we'll talk about in a little bit. And but
Rear Window has a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. Also, I love Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart is the best.
Oh yeah, Jimmy Stewart and Grace Kelly. It's really good. I will say, it is a tad slower, and I think that's just kind of how movies have changed over time. But it is really good. It's definitely a movie you can't just like look at your phone occasionally, just like pay attention. Like, you need, it demands you to be like watching it the whole time. Otherwise you're kind of missing out on stuff. But it was really good. It was really, and that's something that I listened to interviews with Shia LaBeouf, how he said that, he goes, yeah, we're not trying to do a direct copy from Rear Window, just kind of more of like an update, or kind of just more, we're going to take the framework of that and then just bring it into the 21st century. And it was really good in Rear Window, it's an apartment complex, and here it's a whole like neighborhood just about. And that's something that the director DJ Caruso said, that how he envisioned this. He said he really wanted to try to find a neighborhood that was like his when he was a kid. You know, he didn't want it to be a cookie cutter neighborhood. He wanted all the houses to have their own character and look different from each other and be more like suburbia. And that's what he was going after. And that's what we got. I really like this. It was interesting too, just looking at the trivia, that Kale's house and Mr. Turner, the killer, his house, like, while in the movie, it looks like they're next door neighbors, but actually the houses were in two different cities.
What? Like, in the actual filming?
Yeah. Yes, in the actual filming, they were in two different cities in California.
Dang. I did not even notice that. That was really good camera work. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, super cool. And I love, and I found that on the IMDb trivia, and I love going through the, when I'm like doing research for these podcasts and I'm trying to get some cool info, I like to get it straight from the horse's mm-hmm. mouth, which is why I like to watch interviews with the actors and directors or like DVD commentary, but I will dabble in the IMDb trivia. And I think we need to have a new segment for dumbest trivia bit on IMDb, because I was scrolling through there and somebody took the time out of their day to go on IMDb and put Disturbia, the movie, not to be mistaken for the Rihanna song.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate that. For that. I appreciate you letting me know that this movie is not a Rihanna song. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your service. Yeah, that was
ridiculous.
So that might need to be a new segment, the dumbest trivia award or dumbest IMDb trivia award.
Well, that definitely wins it for me. Good gravy.
Well, I am really anxious to see what kind of drinking rules you got, Levi. So what do you got? I'm really curious to see what you picked out of this
movie. Okay, I'm trying to set this drinking rule up before I say it, just so I don't offend anybody, but the character Ashley is kind of this, there's a trope that she exhibits that kind of is a tendency in a lot of horror or thriller movies. If you've seen Cabin in the Woods, have you seen Cabin in the Woods, Brooker?
Oh, I love that movie.
Such a good movie. I'm not going to dig too much into it, but they kind of give an overview of like these archetypes that you kind of find in these slasher, horror, thriller, whatever films, of the characters. You have the athlete, the scholar, the fool, the virgin, and then the whore. And Ashley kind of mm-hmm. plays this whore character of, like, her whole character is, you know, again, is just this girl who's there to, like, for you to look at, where you watch her swimming. You have these, you know, creeps looking out their window, watching her swim, watching her change in her room that has no walls. It's just windows. Like, that is the most absurd thing in the world. So she, every time you see, quote unquote, you see Ashley play the whore character. So you see her, like, I'm not going to mimic her because I do not want a soundbite of me pretending, like, you know, that that breathy kind of voice of, it almost sounds mm-hmm. like a moan, but she's talking. That, she's walking around shirtless with all the swimming scenes. So take a drink whenever that happens. Drink every time the phone rings. I feel like the ringing phone is a classic horror kind of trigger to where it's getting intense, the camera's zooming in, and then the phone rings. You're like, oh, and it's supposed to catch you off guard. Mm-hmm. So every time the phone rings, which happens more often than you think, every time, I said this earlier, every time you realize Shia LaBeouf is a really good actor. I mean, he just carried this movie by far the most talent, like, as far as just his screen time. There's very few people who could lead a film, especially at his age at the time, could lead a movie and he could be the centerpiece, not surrounded by a cast, but literally it just be him walking around a room, eating food, playing video games, watching TV, sighing, moaning, thinking. And his facial expression is just so good. So drink every time you realize that Shia LaBeouf is a really, really good actor. This one's kind of goofy, but I had to do it. So the Mustang is my favorite car, just overall. And the moment when his neighbor, Mr. Turner, played by David Morse, is pulling up, I'm watching it, and I say to myself, huh, Mustang, like, out loud. I went, oh, Mustang. And then immediately afterward, Shia LaBeouf's character says, oh, Mustang. And I went, oh, me and you, Shia. So whenever the Mustang pulls up and there's this giant gash in the front of it. This classic Mustang, pour a little bit out. Because that poor Mustang did not deserve to be a part of this whole situation. It was so, it's just such a pretty car. So pour a little bit out for the Mustang.
It's part of the body count.
Exactly. And the last one was every time you switch on if the killer was really the killer. So every time, because Mr. Turner is clearly being set up as we think he's a murderer. And then the shock is that the shock is, oh, he wasn't the murderer, but then he actually is the murderer. And whenever you kind of switch back and forth between whether or not you actually think he's the murderer, because it feels, at times it feels like a red herring, but then at the end it's not. I was so sure up until we saw Mr. Turner actually just like put Kale's mom Julie into the wall and bust her nose. I was so sure for the whole movie that Ashley was the murderer. I was so sure. I thought that she had moved there from, I think, New York is what she said from.
She said the city.
Or the city. It wasn't even a city.
Yeah, she just said we moved from the city.
That's right. It was so vague. And I said, this girl, like her parents are fighting. There's this like weird thing going on. Like they ran away because she murdered this girl. I was so sure that she was going to appear at some point and like stab Shia LaBeouf in the back or something. And so, but every time go ahead.
So did you think, so like we kind of see on the TV, like through like news broadcasting that they're talking about these murder cases in Texas. So were you thinking that Ashley was part of that?
I thought Ashley was that the murders in Texas were her, and she had moved. He said, I just moved from the city, but the city could have been somewhere in Texas.
Gotcha.
It's just this vague kind of overview. So I thought they were trying to throw us off, but
that would have been a
huge twist. I love the big twist, which is, you know, I'll touch on that here in a little bit. But gosh, it just felt way too obvious. I'll touch on, you know, I'm not going to jump into the scenes yet. We'll do that here in a second. I want to hear your drinking rules first, Brooker. What did you have?
Okay, so my first drinking rule is whenever. So all these kind of apply for whenever people are peeping, like being like peeping Toms or spying on their neighbors. But whenever they go from one window to another and it's like a continuous sequence. So like they're following someone. So when they go from one window to another, take a drink. This one is a very dangerous rule.
Yeah.
Like you could play with just this rule and get drunk. So for my second rule, whenever somebody is holding binoculars, take a drink.
Oh, that's also dangerous.
That one is that's my, as Levi has termed it, my master class rule.
Yep.
I had a similar rule to yours about the phone ringing, but mine was specific to take a drink every time that I'm so horny ringtone plays, which was hilarious. I remember that was like just a big joke with like everyone I knew that saw this movie. That was like the thing everybody would try to like mimic. But yeah, so take a drink every time that I'm so horny ringtone plays.
That's good.
I said take a drink every time we actually see his ankle bracelet. So whenever it's in the shot and you see it, take a drink. Which I kind of find hilarious that he decorates it with stickers. I don't know why, but I kind of found that to be kind of, it's like, isn't this cool putting skulls with flames on it?
I'm telling you, it's just that like 2007 idea of what an angsty teenager is.
This is what emo kids do. They put skulls on everything.
Right?
Yeah, so I what, like, if kids were to do that today, like what kind of sticker would that be?
Oh gosh. Baby Yoda.
Oh.
It just feels like a baby. Just, I mean, sticker. Are you saying specifically angsty kids or just like any kids?
I guess angsty kids, but any kids works too.
If it's just the general overview of like any teenager, it'd probably be a Baby Yoda. Angsty specifically? What? What's the popular band? Man, this is such an old person thing to say. What's the popular band for the kids nowadays?
Fuck. I don't
Lizzo.
Know.
Lizzo. It might be Lizzo. Lizzo transcends all age groups. I'm sure there's like a Lizzo sticker or something. Or an Ariana Grande sticker.
I have no idea. I'm grasping at straws to like just names that I've heard or whatever. I don't know. I just keep going to prequel memes. I can't think of anything.
Prequel memes.
I just keep
thinking
of like General Kenobi or something like that, or Hello There.
Oh my gosh, dude. So you're going back to you're going to what we would put on our ankle bracelets.
General Kenobi. Yes.
Oh my gosh, dude. Yeah. I don't listen all the music, but I listen to is always a couple years behind. Like I've got a Paul McCartney poster on my wall and a Beatles record, but that's everything else is just, yeah, I don't really, yeah, I'm a little behind the times as far as like keeping up with modern music.
Oh my God, an N95 mask. all right. So that was my fourth drinking rule. Every time you actually see his ankle bracelet in the shot, take a drink. My fifth drinking rule is whenever Ronnie does something stupid. Yep. So we see like the first time they meet Ashley, he just can't talk. Like he's just blah, 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 yep. blah. Or when they get back up to Kale's room and they're talking and Ronnie is, he's not saying anything independently. He's only repeating everything Kale is saying. He's like, yeah, he's from Texas. He just melts in front of this attractive girl that's in front of him. So yeah, take a drink every time Ronnie does something stupid.
Oh my gosh, he was such a weird. He's such a weird character. Like, why would you do that? Like in the closet with your eyes rolled back and everything. Why would you? Ugh.
It's so messed up. But I know that we gave a lot of credit to Shia LaBeouf. But I really did like Sarah Romer and Aaron Yeoh in this. Sarah Romer was fine, you know, nothing like super spectacular or anything. But like Aaron Yeoh was really funny, and I was kind of curious about what was the age difference between everyone. And Sarah Romer was only 2 years older than Shia LaBeouf when they did this. I think she was 22 and he was about 19 or 20. When he did this movie, but Aaron Yeoh is 11 years older than Shia LaBeouf.
Dang.
Oh, I'm sorry. Aaron Yeoh is 8 years older than
Shia
LaBeouf.
That is a huge difference.
Still, so it was, I was just kind of like really taken back by that. I was like, what? He looks so young in this movie. Yeah, but good for him. you know, just be the founding youth, you know, just ride that look. Just ride that baby face as long as you can. Yeah. But so I really liked them a lot. And as much as Shia LaBeouf was really good in this, I felt like you really needed your villain to be as excellent of a squaring partner. And David Morse was fantastic in this as Mr. Turner.
Yes.
He was incredibly intimidating. He was creepy. And he was kind of methodical too. Like I felt like that they were kind of trying to go for Hannibal Lecter vibes with him a little bit, just because
that is exactly what he is a discount Anthony Hopkins. That is exactly right,
and we mean that in the nicest way possible, because he did a really good job with this. But yeah, he did look like a much younger Anthony Hopkins in this, because
oh yeah, discount Anthony Hopkins is a compliment. Are you kidding me? Anthony Hopkins is one of the greatest actors of our generation, or I guess of the past generation. But yeah, so that is a huge compliment.
And he was just he was very creepy in this. And I think we only get two or three jump scares in this movie. I'm probably wrong on that, but there aren't too many jump scares in this, but
there's not many, you know.
One of my favorite ones with him, and I guess this is a good way to transition into scenes I really liked, was it was the night before Kale was spying on Mr. Turner, and he accidentally flashed his camera, And mm-hmm. Mr. Turner saw that, and when he gets back up, you see that Mr. Turner is just staring at you. And yeah. The next morning, Kale just walks down. He's making breakfast. We're just seeing, like, looks like a normal day. And then when he closes the refrigerator, Mr. Turner is in his house. Yeah. And it was just, it was so good. And he's just, like, the way David Morris just stands there, he just has this just evil, bad presence with him. And you just get it without him saying a word, just him just standing there. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Dude, yeah, David Morris as Mr. Turner was incredible. Specifically in the category of scenes, this is, for me, was the sweatiest I got in the whole movie, was the scene between Mr. Turner and Ashley when Ashley's trying to pull out of the garage.
Yes, it's so good.
And he reaches, first of all, to any young women, actually, let me rephrase that, to any women at all, to any person who has someone that they don't know reaching into their car to grab their keys, just hit the gas. Just hit the gas. I don't care if you run over their foot. I don't care, whatever. No one has the right in any situation to reach into your car and to take your keys out of the ignition. That is psychopathy, at its finest. I cannot. Anyway, just, oh my gosh, it was just so tense. And him leaning on the car window and reaching in there and grab it and then sitting in the car being like, are we clear? Are we on the same page? I'd be like, oh my gosh, Ashley. And in that moment, I said, okay. That was the moment where I realized that Ashley was not. I said, okay, there's no way Ashley is the killer. It's 110% Mr. Turner or nobody. It's either Mr. Turner or nobody. Because Ashley did a very, like, the, you know, the character, Ashley looked terrified. And he did such a good job about making people uncomfortable. Yeah. This is just public service announcement. Do not let strangers just reach into your car. That should be common knowledge. Ashley should have hit that gas, karate chopped his arm or something. That's just not appropriate. I don't know how Mr. Turner has gotten away with murder for so long. He clearly doesn't understand boundaries.
No. Well, I think he hasn't, because, I mean, we see he scares Ashley enough to where she's even trying to convince Kale and Ronnie that they just need to drop it. She's just like, hey, you know what? He's being reasonable because he's just asking for his space. I mean, we're the ones spying. Like, she's already, like, thinking in terms like that. So we kind of see he's probably been able to get away with this because he's able to intimidate people so well that they just go, yep, okay, cool.
Yeah, it was... That was by far the most nerve-wracking part of the movie for me.
Yeah, and that was one of my favorite scenes, too, because that monologue he gives, it's so... And the way he delivers it, it's so chilling, and it... I think there's, like, even, like, a little bit in there where he says, like, he kind of starts to think that perhaps Ashley has some sort of, like, crush on him or something. He was like, well, you know, I can understand your fascination in older men. He kind of, like, grabs her hair a little bit and plays with it with his fingers. He's like, you're just, like, too young for me or something like that. And it's kind of like, ugh.
Yeah, it's so good. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, don't. Yeah, a man, some strange man touching your hair. That's just all the red flags, And it was like, he was like messing with her and talking with her, like the him touching her hair. It was almost like he was messing with a thing, like being like, do I want this thing? Do I not want this thing? No, I don't want this thing. Like right. He in that moment, it wasn't like two people talking. It was a guy looking at an object that he was trying to decide if he wanted or not.
Right. Ugh. And David Morris, I saw while I was doing the research, and Shia LaBeouf talked about this in one of his interviews, that David Morris didn't talk to any, like, the young cast members, like, throughout this. He didn't talk to them until after the movie was done, because he was very much a method actor. And he wouldn't talk to them. And Shia LaBeouf said that actually during their fight scene, David Morris broke two or three of his fingers. And he didn't want to stop. Like he broke his fingers. And they're like, oh, do we need to stop? Do you go to the hospital? He goes, no, let's keep going. And he was such, like, a method actor. Like, he would he would have the director give Shia LaBeouf messages from him, just like him just being like, "You're a shit actor. Like you're nothing to me compared to me. Like you're just like, kid, you're going to like make this movie tank." Like he was just sending him like really mean things throughout Holy this, crap. Just that way, because he's trying to intimidate them like on and off the screen. And the scene where Mr. Turner comes into the house with a baseball bat, Shia LaBeouf said that was the first time he actually spoke to him, and his first words to him were, "Kid, you better duck, cause I'm swinging." And like he just went full psycho method, and it's so good. I'm happy he did it because it's such a good performance.
Dang,
I love it,
man. Oh yeah, that method acting can. That'll wear you out too, like especially for the people who. Oh gosh, that is so scary. Oh my
goodness. Shia LaBeouf did say that once they were done filming, he did like come up to them, was very nice. Like David's awesome. He's really nice. He was just in character the whole time.
Oh gosh, I would apologize profusely if I did that. Just like, listen, I'm so sorry. I don't think you're a shit actor. I think you did a great job. I appreciate you entertaining. Like that was so good. I'm so sorry. I would feel so bad for saying all those things to young Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, and he was just cold to all of them throughout the whole thing because he was trying to keep that intimidation factor for his character with them.
Mm. Another scene I wanted to touch on, kind of switching gears a little bit, is the what I'm calling the Shia LaBeouf's "I know you" scene. And it's that moment where... it's just so funny because Shia LaBeouf is such a little shit in this, or I should say Kale is such a little shit in this movie, where he says, Ashley's like, "I'm gonna throw a party," and Kale's like, "A party? Oh, of course. It took you that long to be that person." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Oh, you know, one of the popular kids, one of the blah 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 blah," and Ashley's like, "It's my house. I want to throw a party. I literally just moved here. I want to make friends. What is the matter with you?" And he's like, "Oh, I just..." Like, he's just been a big baby. Goes in, ruins the party with the music. She comes up and all that stuff and was like, "You're the worst." And Shia LaBeouf goes on this kind of... this speech about... he's like, I know you so well because I've been spying on you. And he's like, "I know that you only sit here and only eat this and you blah, 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 blah." And Ashley says something like, "That is either the creepiest or the sweetest thing I've ever heard." And she said that and I was like, "Creepiest. It's the creepiest."
Yes, right?
The answer is creepiest.
This is one of your drinking rules too, because she kind of says it in that weird way. Like, that's either the creepiest or the sweetest thing I've ever heard. And this movie is so fucking horny. Yeah. I don't get it. Like, this is... I went and checked. There are no American Pies that came out this year. The only other movie that might rival it in horniness is Superbad. But this movie takes the cake.
Yeah, that's up there for sure.
Kat and I were watching it, and we're both just like, this... there's so much weird sexual tension in this movie.
And it's just, like, illogical. Like, it's the classic, like, movie. Be like, "I've seen you from far away, and I've gotten to know you." But being like, "Yeah, because you didn't have the balls to, like, get to know me in person because you're a freaking creepo. Like, staring at me through my..." You know, granted, you should not change in front of an open window. You need to, like, because of creepos like Shia LaBeouf's character. But you just be aware, because you never know who's got a pair of binoculars. But in that moment, it's just like... but at the same time, it's like, it's in her house, and she shouldn't have to be like, "Who might be staring through my window?" Like, don't stare through people's windows. Don't do that. That's so creepy. Yeah. So yes, if any boy... shoot, if any girl, if any human says to another human, "I know you because I've spied on you for 3 weeks, and I know every little intricate part of you because I've studied you from afar," you'd be like, "You know what I'm going to do? Drop kick your ass out of my life. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to curb stomp you. That's what I'm going to do." It just was that whole scene. I'm just a big fat eye roll. But it was, you know, classic kind of horror movie, like the two people get together and then make out and then something happens or whatever. So yeah, I had to mention that scene just because of how ridiculous it was.
I want to bring up, as like while we're talking about scenes, I want to bring up all of like the Ronnie recon missions that he goes in, that he goes to do for Kale. Ugh, like when he breaks into the car, it's Ronnie was really funny. He was one of the funniest characters in this, and I just love just hearing him on the. He's doing that whole like squeezing your phone between your shoulder and your ear thing as he's talking to Kale.
Yep.
He's like, "Oh man, this is stupid." And blah blah blah. And when he like backs out for a second, he's like, "No man, Operation Stupid is officially over." Which, by the way, was Spielberg's favorite line of this movie.
Really?
Kale goes, "No, you got to get back in there. Don't worry, Ashley has." Has confirmation where he's at. He's still at the hardware store, blah, blah, blah. You just hear him go, his like, pent-up frustration is so good. it tickles me. But then when... I love how the third act of this movie kicks off with with Ronnie needing to break back into Mr. Turner's garage to get his cell phone that he left in his car. This was so tense.
Oh yeah,
it was just so suspenseful. And again, I love it because we're not seeing it from Ronnie's perspective, we're seeing it from Kale's perspective, and so it added to the terror. And you know, we kind of see him run through the house and everything, and then Kale says, you know, screw this, I'm gonna go get my best friend. He grabs a bat and he goes over there. It's so good. And the whole time I was watching this, I was like, yeah, I would definitely do the same thing. Like, if I thought my friend broke into his house on my behalf and I thought all this was happening, I would definitely go over there to baseball bat. Like, cops be damned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was, it was just so good. It was such a good way to kick off the third act of the movie.
Yeah, I thought it was the right choice, too. It's kind of, yeah, you think your friend's in danger and you think that your neighbor's a serial killer. Be like, I'm fine risking jail. Plus, the kind of the logic of, it's going to bring cops here. I think I would have made the same decision. Which is the last kind of big scene that I had down was just the whole ending progression was so good. Mm-hmm. Him discovering, Kale discovering each room, like that the blueprints were right. He was all right. And the underground area where he buries and kind of decomposes the bodies, the place where he dissects everything, the scene where you have the police officer is making his way, Officer Gutierrez is making his way to the house, pulls a gun, and Mr. Turner is waiting behind the wall and cracks his neck. You know, all of these, like, oh gosh, just intense, and him finding his mom all tied up, like, oh, it was just so suspenseful and so good.
Oh no, it was definitely good. And the once we get into the house, and this movie does it. What I love is that we kind of it's a cliche thing, but I don't care. I still love it. As like all the tension and the fight is building in this last part of the movie, there's a thunderstorm coming through. But I love it because they kind of use that as a way to just be extra creepy because you only see Mr. Turner like spying on the cop from inside the house whenever there's lightning flashing. You just kind of see his face like behind curtains and whatnot. I will say I didn't really think about it until I watched it this time for the podcast, but the cop is the only really kill we get on screen. There's really only like two real legitimate deaths in this movie. The redhead from the club girl from earlier in the movie, which we still, again, she dies off screen, and then the cop, but that's it. This is, I think, something that would have kind of helped strengthen this movie if they gave it like an R rating and actually had some other kills in this. That's actually what they originally planned on doing, but for some reason they decided to tone it down.
Is it implied that Mr. Turner, after he murdered the redhead, put on like a red wig and drove her car away? Is that was implied? That's what was implied. Okay.
Yes, yes. Because later on, when Kale discovers that side room or his like lair he had built, he finds a red wig.
That's what I figured. The red wig. I was like, okay, then he was the one. I just wasn't 100% sure about it.
Part of me like wants to think extra, like extra cynical about it, and that he like scalped her and then just like wore it like Hannibal Lecter.
No, honestly, I mean, I think that would come in with your rated R your R rating right there.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that scene, because now that I watched Rear Window, that happens in that movie. Like, you see who you think is the victim walk out, but really it wasn't them. And that was kind of like the big point in the movie of like, oh, you're like, you know, you might be going crazy because that woman, like many witnesses saw her leave, but she actually didn't. It was just somebody else. And that's kind of like where this movie, that's kind of like the last point of evidence that you have to like think about, like, oh, okay, she actually didn't leave. That was just Mr. Turner. Do you think that this movie would have been better if it was a, if it had a higher kill count, or do you kind of think the violence that's already in it, it's good enough?
I honestly think it's good enough just because that's what kind of added to the suspense, that you couldn't see exactly what was going on, and it left you in suspense for, I don't know, like you weren't really putting on, if you were thinking who is the killer, nobody you knew really was kind of on your radar. And it kind of, at the point where they dug up the, they showed the bag with all the deer parts in it, you're like, oh crap, Mr. Turner might actually be a normal person. So I think that not as many on-screen kills just kind of adds to the suspense of who is Mr. Turner.
I saw that in the original script, Ronnie was actually supposed to die in this, that they kind of decided to do that, that fake out last minute and just have him, which I go back and forth. I mean, just knowing that he was supposed to die off, I was like, oh, maybe that would have been like cooler, like just make the movie a little bit more, make the stakes higher of this movie. But it's a shitty joke he does, but it's kind of funny. And also, I just love that line delivery we give of Shia LaBeouf. He throws him up against the wall. Do you have any idea what I just been through? It's a very good line delivery he gives.
I thought it was good just because of how he ended up discovering that Mr. Turner was the murderer, of like watching through the video and catching by random happenstance that little bitty clip of the girl's face in the vent. So I think that the payoff was worth it to not kill him off. But yeah, I think I when I saw the video of him being like, look in your closet, I was like, Mr. Turner just texted him, oh my gosh, he's dead. I thought he actually was dead. It felt very... it felt like that was what was supposed to happen, and it didn't, which kind of added to the suspense of it all.
I kind of want to talk about the, like, what is the message of this movie, and it's kind of more, I kind of talked about this at the beginning of the episode, but it's, for me, it's kind of more of what the message could have been, or like what the story could have been about, and I felt like this movie missed on. I mean, so, you know, we start off with Kale's, in his dad's car wreck, which, by the way, was a very crazy cold open to this movie. And it's weird that a car wreck was a jump scare. Like, I don't know if it got you, but it got, did. It still gets it me. Did. The yeah, and it's so cold and rapid. It happens so fast. And I felt like this movie should have been about Kale getting over the guilt that he's carrying for something that isn't his fault. And that doesn't happen. It's just he's just being validated for the suspicion he had of his neighbor. The whole movie is kind of the payoff he gets, not so much of like, hey, I shouldn't be carrying this guilt. It's totally fine to grieve and mourn over my dad, but I need to realize it wasn't my fault. And I felt like that was kind of missed on this movie, that they really should have brought that more to the forefront. But so because of that, I kind of don't really see too much of a message of this movie, besides, you know, looks could be deceiving, don't judge a book by its cover, you know, all those kind of cliche things. What about you? Did you kind of have any sort of overall message or lesson?
I had a really hard finding a message for this one, or like a moral or whatever. I the more we've talked about it, I agree with you on the dad thing. I wish there was some more of a resolution with the father, that added, you know, added to the movie as a whole. I just wrote down, don't spy on people because it's creepy. But also, yeah, mind your own business. Well, I mean, kind of. Gosh, that phrase "mind your own business" is, it has a dark side and a good side to it. Of mind your own business is don't be snoopy, like don't be like nosing around where you don't belong. But also at the same time, mind your own business can also kind of be a, you know, can also be kind of a don't ask, don't tell kind of thing where you're kind of getting into, you know, oh, this person is being abused, but it's none of my business. You know, oh, I hear someone getting screaming in the other room, or in the other apartment. You know, domestic abuse, none of my business. I want to be careful on that, like, you know, it's not my, but like, don't, there's a difference between noticing a situation in which you need to intervene and spying on people, you know, don't be a creep. Also, right. I get the whole, well, actually I don't get it, but I get the fact that it is a fact that if you are a serial killer, you often kind of like make your den or your nest kind of amongst your victims, in a sense, like there is a, you're kind of in the center or around where you kind of prowl and prey. But I, you know, if you want to get away with murder, don't move to the suburbs and keep murdering people in the suburbs, you crazy person. Like, and you know, and I get it. I get it that it's like, it's you're supposed to kind of be someone who, it's not, oh, the crazy man in the woods is the one killing people. It's, oh, well, not Mr. Turner. He's a, well, granted, Mr. Turner's kind of a, keeps to himself and is kind of a crazy person. In and of, he's kind of creepy as is. But like with serial killers, which I feel like we've talked about this before. Oh, we talked about it with, when we did our American Psycho podcast. If you are kind of this psychopath, there is this level of charmingness to you and you're living in your community and giving back to the people around you. But Mr. Turner didn't really fit that anyway. So if you are, if you don't have the charisma of your stereotypical serial killer, don't move to the suburbs. Don't do that. That's a terrible idea. Well, I guess, you know what? I changed my mind. Do that because you'll be easier to spot for all of us people that don't want you to be a serial killer. So maybe do, you know what? Strike that from the record. All serial killers, be as obvious as possible. But you know, go ahead.
I was gonna say, you brought up the collection of bodies he has at the in his house in this pool or well. I'm getting at is, what is that? I didn't get what this pool of bodies.
I figured he had like put either under his house, and there was just like, I don't know, sea level or something. I don't know. I guess they're not near the beach. My first thought was that he had kind of built this system to like decompose the bones. But if that was true, Shia LaBeouf would also have kind of been in more pain because it would have been some sort of acidic material that could degrade bone. Which if it can melt bone, it can for sure melt skin. So Shia LaBeouf would have been very bubbly and whatever. So I don't really know.
Yeah, I was just kind of, I mean, I'm not really like critiquing this, you know, it's a PG-13, sure, you know, suspenseful horror movie, whatever. It doesn't need to be perfect. I was just kind of, every time we get to that part, I'm just going, what is going on? Is he just trying to like have a pool party with his corpse or something? Like, I don't get what Mr. Turner, like, what's his angle here?
He's making a soup. It's a soup.
Oh, gross. Oh, man. I just, yeah, I always kind of get lost there. One of the last final thoughts I had about this that I forgot to bring up was, I love the end scene we get where Kale finally gets his revenge on the twerps that have been pranking him all movie. And he calls the mom pretending to be like the Cinemax guy, like, you know, like, hey, y'all been, what does he call, what does he say? Like, they call them a skinny flicks, man. That's what the kids call them these days.
Skinny flicks.
And the mom comes in, and the thing that cracks me up is when she comes in, the kids freak out. And one of the kids, he spins so hard, you see popcorn go flying. And I find it hilarious that these kids are just watching porno and eating popcorn like it's a movie.
And in the middle of the day, no less. Are you crazy? If you want to get rid, like, if you want to sneak this around, like, in the middle of the day? I don't know. These kids are clearly rookies.
I love this. You're like, serial killers, this is not how you get caught killing kids. This is not how, this is how you avoid getting caught watching pornography. Like, these are my tips.
No, it's less of the, as a kid, you know, weirdly enough, that was not something I really had access to, that, like, that young, honestly. Yeah. Like you couldn't just turn on the TV. We didn't have a lot of channels to begin with, so it wasn't something I could just buy or find. And if I did search anything, I wasn't an idiot. Like, I knew about search history. So, like, that's, you know, whatever. But, like, to be, like, on cable and to just be watching all this in the middle of the day on a Saturday, like, these kids have to be, and they're, like, what, like, in elementary school?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're, like, second graders. That feels way too early to be, like, let's get together and watch the nudie films.
I don't think they're second graders. They're probably, like, I'm going to guess, like, 6th or 7th graders. Like, they're definitely, like, around, like, 12. Like, 12, 13.
Okay,
like, they're
so,
definitely
okay,
around
so middle school. So, like, middle
yeah,
school.
Yeah, yeah, middle school.
Okay, yeah. I guess that makes
sense.
Yeah,
no, these aren't second graders, but I think...
I can't imagine watching that with your friends, though. I feel like that's something that people would, like, find and do by themselves. Like, 3 7th graders being like, let's get together and watch this, bro. That just feels gross.
Jimmy, did you get the popcorn? Oh, yeah, boys.
Oh, yeah, boy, it's Saturday at 11 a.m. You know what that means. Kids are troubled, man. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was really funny. So yeah, I just wanted to make sure I brought that up. That I thought I was happy
funny.
that we left on that really funny joke. There's the kid.
Felt like some
you just see
good
popcorn.
Resolution.
Next time you watch it, pay attention. You'll see popcorn flying as the kid just whips his head around real quick and his mom walks in. Oh man. But so Levi, So Levi. Do you think that there needs to be a sequel to Disturbia?
Okay. Short answer, yes.
Oh, okay.
Long answer, we're going to finally get... I added this last part. So I said yes, but only if it's with Shia LaBeouf again, and Shia LaBeouf is the killer.
Oh, okay.
Okay? And
so Kale has turned to the dark side?
Kale has turned to the dark side, and here's why. I added this. I was thinking about what you were saying. This is how we go full circle with the death of his father. There's some sort of something snaps in his brain. If, like, the science teacher mentions his dad and he just, like, breaks and pops him in the nose, think about what happened. Like, he just sits with it, doesn't resolve it, doesn't get the counseling he needs to kind of coach himself through his dad's death and kind of come to terms with it and realize it's not his fault. And he just, the poor guy, psychologically breaks. And it could, maybe it's this whole, like, it's kind of a Jekyll and Hyde situation where he lives his day as Kale, but then he has dreams of murdering people. And you go back and forth where at the day, and then he hears about these murders. He's like, it's crazy. I had dreams about those murders. And at the end, the twist is those murders were actually him. He just couldn't remember because he had formulated this alternate self in his brain that truly, truly believed that it was his right to just destroy humanity for taking his father away from him.
So he kind of, he's gotten to the point where he sees himself as, this is what I'm supposed to do. I am the angel of death. Like, everyone I come in contact with ends up getting hurt.
Yeah, like, kind of. I mean, if you want to, like, you can add that level of, like, justification to kind of add another layer of character development. But I just think, like, in the whole seam of kind of giving an homage to classic films, give an homage to Rear Window, give an homage to Jekyll and Hyde, and maybe I don't know what you would call this movie. I can't even think of a good title for it. But yes, all that to say, I'll sit with it for a little bit. I should have thought of a title, but while you do your sequel talk, I'll see if I can think of a good title. But yes, short answer, yes, there needs to be a sequel as long as Shia LaBeouf is the killer.
Gotcha. I'm going to say no. I think it's fine how it is, and it would be kind of hard to do a sequel because I'm still in the mindset of it would be happening right shortly after these events or maybe even a year or two afterwards because it would be kind of hard to retell the same story of somebody being stuck in a house with these characters and then them turning to spy on people. It'll be kind of hard on that. I think the only way you could do it is if it's kind of like the, if it's the reverse effect to where it's not them spying on people, they are paranoid that they're being spied on.
Oh.
And so they're kind of, it slowly morphs into like they're always, you know, looking over their shoulders, or they think they, anytime they see a neighbor in the window, they automatically assume they were just looking at me or something like that. So they're kind of like haunted by the events of the first movie.
I was going to say, it's kind of like if you are someone who has cheated on your spouse or significant other, you are more likely to suspect your future spouse or significant other for cheating on you because you know that you are prone to cheating as well.
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good. I could see that happening. I also thought of a title. You call it Turner. You just call it Turner. From Mr. Turner. But they think there's like some sort of, while he's going on this killing spree, there's like a signature or something that they know that some guy named Turner is doing all these murders, and so they think that Mr. Turner survived. Or Shia LaBeouf's like, oh my gosh, he's still at large. Come to find out that it is this alternate person who kind of, in the thrill of like ridding the world of this Mr. Turner, and is like, it has become my job to bring kind of justice and murder on these evil people, the same terrible people that killed my father. He dubs himself Turner in the name of the first person that he ridded from this world. Called Turner. Man, okay, that would be a good movie. I would watch the crap out of that.
Your hype about this screenplay.
I know, yeah. I'd be like, Warner Brothers, picture this. Picture this.
Greg Universal?
Yes. Universal Studios.
Was that from this episode or the last episode? I can't remember.
I don't know. They all meld together.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, so overall, Levi, would you recommend this movie to someone?
I would. I think it's well paced. I think it's a decent movie. Shia LaBeouf kills it. And the characters, even though the rest of them aren't like crazy developed, they still hold their place well enough. And so, yes, if you are wanting a movie that is not too violent, but it still gives you kind of that thrill and that suspense, I would say Disturbia is absolutely the movie for you.
I absolutely recommend this movie, and I find it pretty rewatchable, not like on a consistent basis, but I'm definitely going to, it's going to be in my October movie marathon for sure. Mm. Any final thoughts before we sign off?
Great movie. Give it a watch. Shia LaBeouf, keep climbing that ladder, man. You are very underappreciated for your skills as an actor. I hope we see you in more and more stuff. I will see Peanut Butter Falcon as quickly as I can.
Absolutely. Well, thanks. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope that you enjoyed our talk on Disturbia. If you like us, please go ahead and give us a... please go ahead and subscribe to us and leave us a nice review on iTunes. We'll be starting to kind of give shout-outs to kind folks that have left us reviews on iTunes. We got one from Derek, and he wrote that we are a celebration of cinema and that we're both informative and laid back. And I completely agree with Derek. I feel like we're pretty laid back people. I like to think I'm informative, but I don't know.
Thank you, Derek. That's very sweet of you, buddy. I appreciate that.
We also like to give you the opportunity to suggest or recommend a specific part or scene in the movie or a drinking rule for us to do. So please be sure that you follow us on our socials at Twitter on Film the Rocks, on Instagram at Film the Rocks Podcast. There you'll see all our news and all of our schedule release, so that way you know what movies we're doing ahead of time. And if there is a specific scene or rule that you like for us to include and for the shout out, just go ahead and email that to us at fotrpodcast@gmail.com.
And keep an eye out for next week's film as we walk through Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Super pumped for that one.
I am so excited for this movie. Ugh, it's so good.
I know.
So good.
I'm pumped to talk about it.
And for you people that think it's boring, you're missing the point.
I can't wait to hear all of your thoughts on it, Brooker.
Alrighty. Well, this has been Film on the Rocks. And be sure to go ahead and subscribe and follow us on our socials.
Don't.
Just remember,
No, go, go. Sorry.
Remember, I am so choked up right now. I have mucus. You go.
I was just gonna say, don't be spying on people through their windows. It's not cool.
And every killer has a neighbor. Good night.
Bye, guys.
Bye.